Okay, we'll get started. I'm Tom Bracken, and this session is Sustaining Ourselves, Caring for Ourselves as We Care for Others. And just one correction, Nancy gave me a really nice introduction, but this is not specifically about dementia. It's not specifically related to what I said about dementia. The notion was anyone that is a caregiver. Now that may be, I'm a physician, Jeannie is a chaplain, maybe you have to deal with your parents. Most of us care for somebody in one form or another, and if you don't, you probably do some of these things wrong anyway. This is my fifth time at Holden, third time on teaching staff, previously assistant to the garbologist, now former assistant to the former garbologist. All the talks I give are based on something I screwed up, and I have been screwing this up for 30 years now, being a caregiver. I'll tell you what I've done wrong as we get through this. I've been a family doctor for 30 years in a small Minnesota town, and I've been overworked and overcommitted for most of those years. I've actually gotten better in the last few years, I hope. And in the past, I've been known to feel, maybe not admit, that if I wasn't doing too much, I wasn't doing enough. Anybody confess to that at all?
Oh, yeah.
Ain't that the truth? You know, oh yeah, I'm saved by faith through grace, not by works. But look at how much I'm doing, God. What I learned at Holden in 2001 is I have called you by name. Everyone is priceless in God's sight, and we should encounter everyone with that in mind. Let's pray for a minute. Lord, we thank you for gathering us here on this special evening. Pray that your spirit would be with us and you would open our hearts to you as we discuss how we can be better caregivers for ourselves and for others. At the end, I have some handouts here if you're interested that sum up a couple of the overheads. I'd like to start with Scripture. Galatians 5:14. For the whole law can be summed up in a single commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. I was actually thinking about this yesterday in my dementia class. I'm not critical about it. It's just that I haven't heard the word love a lot. I think it's kind of implied that we love our neighbors. It's the basis of everything we're talking about. And Matthew 6:34, how many of you can live this? Do not be anxious about tomorrow. Tomorrow will look after itself. Consider the lilies of the field. So as we go through a few minutes of discussing these issues, pipe in every time. I hope I don't get through my material because I've definitely talked a lot. Okay, caring for ourselves, the basic problem. Most of us here are caring Christians. Anybody not? We have had some Jewish people here. Oh, we've got Catholics too. We give of ourselves in love to those around us. Most of us here, and we've had a lot of discussion about this week, which has been great, are also doubtful Christians. We don't consistently believe that we are accepted by God just because He loves us. So we make sure that God and our fellow believers see how hard we are working to be wonderful people. Tell me you didn't do anything this week that you thought of what. We thus end up not caring enough about our own bodies and our own spirits. We have a ward at our hospital, and it has to do with being a caring person. And this was the first year in 20 years that I didn't care if I got it. So I got it and gave a speech. And one thing I said, I told them how hard it was to do all these caring acts to make sure somebody noticed. And when you push healthy old lady across the street, nobody sees her, you got to bring her back again. And I've been guilty of things like that. One problem is the Apostle Paul. And I've been reading a lot about the Apostle Paul this week and have come to have, I've had a fair appreciation for him. I've come to have some more appreciation for him. But this is one of the things that I don't quite understand is statements like that. Statements like this. I've bruised my body and make it known its master. He's talking about, he's always defending himself I guess there's a whole area of Bible criticism that's based on finding out what Paul was saying in defense and then assuming that who the people are he's defending himself against and then kind of emulating them. I can outdo them, more overworked than they. Thanks, Paul. Right there. I can outdo them, more overworked than they. Scourged more severely, more often in prison, many a time face to face with death, and on a number of committees as well. And of those things, I'd take the scourging over, like our quality committee at the hospital. Ugh. But he manages to get to this, which you all know, which kind of gives you a lens to look at the other stuff. I may give all I possess or even give my body to be burnt, but if I have no love, I am none the better. So at least he could see his way to that. But he, you know, if you read through those epistles, he brags now and then. So some thoughts. Does anybody think it's wrong? Does anybody feel guilty that maybe we shouldn't even be talking about this? We need more seminars from people saying, you know, I see nobody's really sacrificing themselves. Nobody's really worked too hard. Nobody stayed up late fixing anything. Oh, these guys out here, they're working electricity. They are working hard. Anybody have a problem with loving themselves? Or feel like they can admit that they do? Thoughts on that? Come on, you're Lutheran.
I have huge problems loving myself. And I realize that I can't love others unless I do, and maybe that's my biggest stumbling block.
I think you love people very well, Joan, but that's... Anybody else have a thought? So I think an answer to the problem here is love your neighbor as yourself. I think we should. It's not written on anything here that I know of. It's a great commandment. Anybody have any good insight into this commandment? The pastors here. I know what this is. This word I know the Greek agape. That's how far I got. But is there anything when you look at this? Now, Stacy would have us take a deep breath, and she'd somehow get you to have good insights. But what does that, what's the first thing this tells us to do? Well, yeah, you have to love who?
Yourself.
No, you have to love your neighbor. What's the second thing you have to do?
Yourself.
But sometimes it's easier to, quote, love your neighbor than it is to like your family members. I mean, going back to...
Like my brother-in-law?
I don't know your brother-in-law, but...
You're lucky. He's a very unloving person.
And so that commandment's really hard. So you go, I just love everybody, but there's a lot of people I don't like.
I think that's a Peanuts cartoon. Linus said, I just love humanity, it's people I can't stand. I think, maybe we've moved beyond this, but I think a lot of us have trouble doing this. That could be a chore. So what I see here that is, it's not just, I mean, it's a wonderful commandment, and it's not, I understand it's, you can find a lot of this in the Old Testament, but Jesus emphasized it. Well, he said, what was the thing he said before this? It's more important than this.
Love the Lord thy God.
Yeah, love the Lord. And then what does he say when he's done saying these two things? Pastor knows. This is the sum of the law. This is it. Don't bother to spend a lot of time dissecting all the rest of it.
Well, that commandment makes me be a workaholic. Because I've got lots of neighbors to love.
Yep. Well, that's a problem. That's what we're talking about. But I think if you go back to what I talked about, and I've learned in Poland, is that we are precious in God's sight. I love Marty Haugen's song about it. That includes ourselves. We'll get to a couple of things we can say about that as we get along. So I think this is a commandment that puts things in perspective. Number one, God. Number two, your neighbor. And I don't know if Jesus meant, I don't know if he meant to say ourselves, but I think that we should love ourselves. And our natural tendency is to think we have to be who? We have to be God. We have to take care of it all. If I don't do it, it's not going to get done. And that turns in, if we feel like we have to do what God does, pretty soon it turns into idolatry. Or, what would the word be for what, if we're being, trying to be God? Demagoguery or something. And that's what happens when you see rich, famous evangelists that are doing great big things. The biggest example, and I'm not condemning him, is Jimmy Baker, who was building that huge park for God and big radio station, TV station, and he felt he was so stressed by this, it was okay for him to kind of descend into self-indulgence and all sorts of adultery and misusing people's funds because it was all for God. But I really like what Bono says. How many of you two fans have we got?
Three.
Hey, look at all those old people that like I had tickets this summer, and then they canceled the whole thing.
He's recovered.
You can bone on us to take a break somewhere.
Yeah. Don't help God across the street like a little old lady.
Yep.
Well, it's in their new album.
I forget. See your boards, but no one on the right. Like a doctor.
Do I?
Much better than a doctor. Much better.
I'm sorry. Should I move it back? Maybe a couple more people.
Now they won't see it on that.
If you have a darker pen, that would help too.
I quit writing up here. Street, across the street, like a little old lady. Let God be God. Which goes back to putting things in perspective. Love God and realize He does what He needs to do. So when we stop and realize it's not just up to us and it's not about glorifying ourselves, then we can step back and take the time to let ourselves live in a healthy way. What did he do?
Darker markers.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Paul. One thing I learned early at Holden, just being on teaching staff, which is just a taste of what it's like to be a long-term staff, is I've heard several stories of people here that get overcommitted. For me to come to Holden is so much better than work. I don't mind working all day. It's fun. But I'm sure if I was here too long, I'd have to think about it, and I'd have to organize my life better so that I had time off. And my understanding is they make people take time off that have done too much. Okay. Taking care of the body is the first thing that perhaps we'll talk about. I met a wonderful oncologist from the Mayo Clinic. I think of Mayo Clinic as, you know, all this fancy high-tech, very complicated process, and probably not that good with people because it's such a huge place. And they got a specialist for your left great toenail and another for your little finger, and there can't be too many people that care about you. But I met Ed Cregan, who's a wonderful oncologist at the Mayo Clinic, and he's a man of humanity, compassion, and spirituality that wrote a book, How Not to Be My Patient. How Not to Be My Patient, A Physician's Secrets for Staying Healthy, which contains his 8 commandments for living long and living well. And he went over them with us at this conference, and I'm going to share them with you when they're on the handout. Anybody have I'm just going to let you guess what the first one is. It just slays me that a male clinic oncologist came up with this. Form stable long-term relationships. How great is that? This doctor who deals with cancer, deals with bodies, has given a lot of thought to this, and he's got, in the book, he has statistics for why this stuff makes sense. And Joan and I were talking today how much fun it is to have friends that you got to know at home, and to come back and see them, and you just have to hug them. We hugged over dirty dishes yesterday. Maintain ideal body weight, which he's a skinny guy. He's a marathon runner. I think that's hard to do. I think you should do it, but I think there's genetics, and I never feel like patients of mine that struggle with this are because they eat way too much or they're slobs or whatever, you're lazy, whatever you want to think about. I think a lot of it is genetics. He recommends a plant-based diet, not strict vegetarianism. Somebody here was talking about, piscatarianism, which is vegetarian plus fish, fairly healthy way to eat. But not a lot of red meats. The age of regular physical activity and plenty of sleep. And I highlighted the next one because I think actually statistically for living long, do not smoke. Somebody might want to check to see if anybody's up. Is it this live that they smoke?
It is.
Use limited amount of alcohol and caffeine. I actually gave up caffeine 5 years ago and don't miss it. I think it affects our moods more than it does our bodies. I don't think you have to do it to live long, but I think it helps you enjoy your day better. And then, look what else he has left. I mean, he hasn't said, eat fish oil or take aspirin or have your cholesterol checked or have a colonoscopy, and I believe in all those things. Foster a sense of spirituality. And that could be a lot of different things, but if you could do that, you're actually going to live longer. Well, he does in the book. There's more to it. Find meaning in life. Where could you do all these things? Trick question.
Hold it.
Basically, the main thing is you should just say go to Holden. Go there every year.
Yeah.
But I thought it was very interesting that three of these things have nothing to do with physical things. Stable long-term relationships, friends and family, foster a sense of spirituality. In other words, be in touch with God. You can go that far with it. Find meaning in life. So this world often tries to convince us that we'll find peace, contentment, or at least pleasure that things in our heart we know aren't good for us. A good dose of alcohol, promiscuity, drugs, gluttony. And it's surprising, but those things usually lead not to peace but despair. I don't know what your teenage kids are like. Mine never look at me and listen to me. I suppose most of you sat down and they said, Mom and Dad, would you please tell us what you find meaningful in life and what values you have? But that's not exactly how it worked for me. So on a few important things, I tried to talk to them that, they might have heard a little bit. But I wrote them letters. And I wrote my oldest daughter, she got this letter, and one of them was about false pleasures. And you just get this notion that, gosh, if I could just have some really good alcohol and could just sit around and drink with friends and really get pretty well plastered, that would be great. And it's never great. And we talked about how drugs promise you that you're going to feel contented or whatever it is, but they always end up being false pleasures. And isn't it funny that you feel better from exercise or day outside or day with friends than all those things? So I wrote this in a letter to her. She went off to college, very liberal. And by the way, the most expensive college in the nation, Sarah Lawrence. And she came back a few months later, and I'm not saying we had a perfect relationship, but things were a little better since she'd been gone for a while. And she said, Dad, I went to a party and they offered me ecstasy. And I remembered your letter. My jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe it. She actually listened to something I said, or actually in this case I wrote. That being said, drugs, gluttony, promiscuity, well, promiscuity is. The other things are not necessarily sinful, but they're not good for your health. And people that do them aren't necessarily sinners. C.S. Lewis never quit smoking, I don't think. Any thoughts so far? But Dr. Cregan's Eight Commandments. What would you add to this?
Find a job you like.
You could just stick that knife in and cut it.
Don't you love your job?
We'll talk about it later.
I think like my bio is up on the thing, and that's what I told our boys. You have to find a job you like, because if you have to get up in the morning and go to a job you hate, that's not going to be good for your body, mind, spirit,
that's good advice.
Health.
Anybody else?
Or if you can't find a job you like, at least control the variables in your job so that you can love what you do. I think that's maybe more realistic, because you could hate anything, I think. You know, I mean, depending on what perspective you take every day you go to work and what you take on. So I find that even more of a challenge, actually.
I know people that worked here that hated it. It didn't seem possible to me, but just absolutely hated it.
That 1, 7, 8 are good insurance against slipping into a semi-depressed state. And if you get into one of those depressed states, you're more likely, I think, to overeat, drink, use drugs, or otherwise try to put a Band-Aid on the problem, rather than dealing with the underlying nature of depression. And I think that a person with stable long-term relationships, good spiritual life, and a good sense of why he or she is on earth in the first place is going to be less likely to slip into one of these false pleasure scenarios.
There's that reminds me of the, everybody know the song Morning Cry? I was there to hear the morning cry. It's a beautiful song. It's from God's viewpoint. I was there when you were born, and then at the end, I'll be there when you take your last breath, and I have one more surprise for you, which of course is being with him. We always sing it for baptisms, and nobody, whenever you sing hymns, you rarely pay attention to the words. The middle verse is, I was there when you wandered off to find where demons dwell. Well, that's what kids do, you know, mostly from age 15 to 25, and it varies in the culture and stuff, but that's when they go out and they're tempted by all these things, and they don't go to church, and they question everything they ever learned from their parents, and some of them get in big trouble, die, babies, whatever. Just a really dangerous time, but it's just kind of incongruous that in the middle of this beautiful song is this thing about wandering off to where demons dwell.
Yeah, Tom, I was going to just mention again, I think stress management, you know, it's so huge. Work-related stress or even family-related stress, it can be such a positive thing, but in a lot of ways it can go the other way.
Yeah.
And then trying to manage it to keep it.
You ever been away from home and you really miss your family? Walk in the house and this holy hell is broken loose. I have twin daughters, and at one point one of them had a date to prom and one didn't. That was about the worst our family ever was. Taking care of the body will lead to a healthier spirit, but the spirit requires direct sustenance of its own, which is often too neglected by busy caring people. I found this book, which they do not have in the bookstore, Inner Peace for Busy People. There's a number of them like it at your bookstore. Meditations for Men, or Meditations for Women That Do Too Much, which was sitting out here in the library yesterday. And just reading it through makes you realize some of the things you're doing right and some of the things you're doing wrong. So I was going to go through some of the things that she has to say. I'm going to show you them, her 52 strategies, and I didn't find them all helpful. So we're gonna go over certain ones of them. So she has her absolute basic strategies for life. Relax and be more productive. Remember that peace is already within you. Save your breath, build your brain power, live with passion, practice patience. And strategies for taking care of yourself. Be a better juggler, which talks about controlling your life, your job, like you mentioned. Honor the precious person inside of you, which is what I said I learned at Holden, that we're all precious in God's sight. Ask for help. Take a Sabbath. Go to Holden. Make the mundane sacred. Create a refuge. Naps. Shed those bad habits. Do what you can, not what you won't. Focus on making small changes. I love this number 22. Give up perfectionism. Joan told me a story today about someone that realized at Holden. Holden was very challenging for her, and realized by looking at an imperfect weaving that it was okay that she was imperfect. I'm going to emphasize a couple of these. Try power whining. I like that. Just whine until you're done with it. Be a source of kindness, practice forgiveness, find meaning in your life, and keep the faith. So we'll talk about a few of these. Relax and be more productive. If you look at stress, you're totally not stressed at all. You're actually not as productive. How many of you work better with a timeline? And there's this Yerkes Dodson law. If your stress goes up, your production goes up for a while. But then when it gets too high, it falls off. And she, like Dr. Cregan also recommends this, put an hour a day aside to do what you really want to do. And here's a doctor speaking. I can't do that every day. But how often do I say, you know, I'm going to do what I really want to do for an hour. I'm going to get some of my family needs done and whatever. And here's something I really like to do. Now, it might be channel surfing, and that's okay. Remember that peace is already within you. Peace is like a sun that's already shining in your heart. I thought Stacy did a nice job, very nice job in Bible study. You would sit, and she would tell you, take some deep breaths and center yourself and find some peace. The first time I was here on staff, they had the prayer on the cross, and I sang that here and played guitar, and they had that song, Be Still and Know That I Am God. And that has been a mantra for me. And when things are really bad, is it by John Bell, I think, wrote the music? Person, music is it Psalm 47? It's one of the 40s.
46.
But just that line, and I've had a couple of crises where, you know, this two or three patients are in trouble and somebody's yelling at me about something else, and I just stop. I don't know if they think I'm spacing out or what. And I do that, and it gets me back to where I can function. And sometimes I actually visualize being there, and I realize, oh, I'm going to be there again someday. I'm going to be back at Holden. Practice patience, a gentle willingness to let life unfold at its own pace. Learning to be patient requires practice. And who are we patient with? I just talked for 3 days about how hard it has been for me to learn how to be patient with my dad. Honor the precious person inside of you, which... What did we, it's the same one we had right here. Love your neighbor as yourself. And I love what she said here. Busyness can be a subtle form of violence against yourself, most likely. Most people wouldn't treat others the way they do themselves because of busyness. We would never tell somebody, well, you've got to work this late and you've got to do that. You better stay up late getting that done. And once a week, I work till 1 in the morning. I'm thinking that's kind of crazy. Honor yourself and treat that person with all the respect they deserve. Choose activities that bring you to life. How often do we do that? You know, I had 2 years ago, I had a week of vacation and wasn't sure what to do. Maybe we should just go down to the Twin Cities and go to some movies and stuff. And, well, here's work camp. And I thought, my gosh, what could be better than going to Holden, eating Holden food, and getting fed spiritually? So I came out here and it was just the best time. Make a list of the things that sustain you and make sure that you review it. See if you're honoring it and see what you're neglecting. Take a Sabbath. Pastor here and I were just talking about taking a Sabbath. We even have a Sabbath policy for physicians at my hospital. Nobody's done it yet. We've had enough crises that people have taken big chunks of time, but it's been for family, really serious crises. I don't know how many of you have seen the Practices of Faith series. Practicing the Faith is the main book that goes through everything, and then they've written separate books on each part of it. Dorothy Bass is the editor. Chief Valpo, am I right? I think so. And I think she wrote this one, Christian Practices for Opening the Gift of Time and Finding the Time You Need. And it talks about the Sabbath a lot. And very first time I came here as a guest, my friend came, I think took one thing with him, which was, I'm going to find some Sabbath time at home. But it's important to not think it has to be Sunday, especially you pastors, although I know you all go home and take a nap on Sunday afternoon. Don't take the Sabbath at a time you can't take it. And I really can't take them Sunday afternoon. I have stuff I have to do. Take it when you can take it. For me, it's Tuesday afternoons. I'm on call Monday. I get home at Tuesday at noon. And my time from Tuesday noon to 10 is Sabbath time. Part of it I spend with my disabled friend next door. And we watch TV. So you might want to start with a mini Sabbath that is 2 or 3 hours, because maybe you can't do a whole day. So take the Sabbath when you can take it, not when you can't. Create a refuge. What do you think altars are in homes for? Or to find a place of peace, a place of worship. You'll see people that have done them around here. Remove the stuff that's distracting. In other words, you don't want to have your TV there. Maybe you want to have music there. Ginny gave the eye-opener on the labyrinth, which of course is a great refuge, where you're not going to do anything else. It's going to be you and God and some peace, and you'll be surprised what you find. I had, when I was here at work week, there was this man that I didn't know very well, and he was kind of bedraggled, so I always made a point of saying hi to him. That's one thing you should do. Say hi to the people you find unattractive. They surprise you. They're, you know, the people that look like maybe they're not so smart, are sometimes very smart. And they have their own wisdom. Anyway, this man gave me a basket. He made these little pine needle baskets. Everybody was making them all eat. Did this in front of everybody. I couldn't figure out why he did it. Didn't seem like much of a gift. And that was a day we had off, so I went on a walk out to Heart Lake. And I was thinking about how little faith I have, how little confidence I have. And I was thinking about how little that basket was. And I was taking pictures. And there was kind of a pretty scene, but it didn't have much color. There was just a few red berries. And I thought, well, that's enough color to make the scene pretty. And I thought, it just hit me in a flash. That's enough color to make the scene beautiful. The basket is enough of a gift for me to be grateful for this limited friendship I had with Mark. I've got enough faith to be faithful, and I've got enough confidence to do what I need to do. It just meant so much to me, and I thought about it so many times in the year and a half since. Of course, I got Mark's basket right on my dresser. And this gift, which first seemed fairly insignificant, kind of like a kid giving you a picture that's just strong, seems so great. Do what you can, not what you won't. Set realistic goals. Lose a little weight, start some exercise. I have a daughter who's got a little bit of OCD. She's my easiest kid by far. She's one of my twins. She was just here last week. And she makes lists of stuff to do, including stuff she already did. So that's easy. She can check off a few things. She feels good about it. What I put 3 stars by is give up perfectionism. Perfectionism is an addiction. You notice that painting's crooked? I noticed that, but it looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Good enough. Anybody know who painted that?
Yeah, Lisa.
Is there a jar to the left?
Teacher. Yeah, there's a jar. Yes.
You know that saying, I'd like to take Holden home in a jar?
Oh,
I think that's what that means.
Yeah, well, it's an absolutely gorgeous painting.
I don't know that for sure, but that's what seems to make sense.
One thing that the author of the book here did is if she fell short of her goals and wasn't perfect, you know, she left the pie, one of the examples was she left the pie in the oven, it was burned. She had put a lot of work into that pot. Making pie here is a lot of work. I watched Janice make rhubarb pie, which is the best pie I have ever had. I don't think the view hurt. But, oh my gosh. You're sitting up on Chalet 10 there, looking out over the Copper Mountain. It was just absolutely delicious. She screws something up like that, what she says is, they chant this, I burned the pie, it's a terrible thing, it's a terrible thing. I burned the pie, it's just simply awful, it's just simply awful. Until they've reduced it to something silly. Learn to say no. That's a pretty trite thing to say. Somebody said no the other night. I had the notion that maybe I should play guitar and hold an evening prayer. The fact that I didn't have a guitar didn't stop me. In fact, it wasn't very long before they were going to do it, didn't stop me. It's kind of a stupid thing. And Chris looked at me and said, you know, I think I'm going to keep it simple tonight. And I thought, you know, yeah, you're right. That would have been bad for me to play. I would have run around trying to find one, get it tuned. You've got this all set up. And I made a point of it when it was done. It was the gal that's a seminary student, and I forget who, yeah, and someone who's playing flute. And it was absolutely the best. And then the opera singer gal, Aldello, is that her last name? Catherine. It was just the most beautiful rendition I've ever heard. I made a point going up to Chris, so I don't think he felt very bad about telling me no. But I said that was the most beautiful setting I ever. And pay attention to how you say no, not too quickly. Thank them for the opportunity. Mark Cedillo was a master at this. He tells you in such a gentle way that the tenors sound horrible. He never says that they sound horrible. He says, well, there's something we need to work on. Cultivate gratitude. The attitude of gratitude is a culmination of all the strategies for inner peace. And a phrase I read once, I don't know who said it, was that the best sign of faith is gratitude. I keep a list of the good things that happen in Holden every time I come, and they're from today that Jonah and I ran into each other and we were going on a walk, that'll make the list. Rhubarb pie is on the list. Often it's just a chance meeting with somebody. I talk to somebody for supper for like a minute and a half. Standing in the rain, out by Heart Lake today, by the falls, in the sun. The sun was coming down, you could really see the rain. And being grateful for things, find it, there's some every day. And when you learn to manage your mind, take care of yourself, relate to others with compassion and kindness, develop a mindful approach to life, gratitude will arise all by itself. We had a CEO at our hospital a couple of years ago that was the entire senior management team was amoral and it lacked integrity and had dirt on each other and there was a bunch of sexual stuff going on. And I was always fighting with him, angry, felt besieged, and I felt bad about the person I had to be. Now he's gone, we have a CEO that's Christian and a good person, and we've replaced them all with good people, and I feel good about myself. And it's really a pity that I didn't take time to step away and look at it and realize I wasn't bad, it wasn't coming from me. I had to have a different attitude and to be grateful for all the good people that were there. Although when it's bad at the top, the people at the bottom start to fight with each other. It was really ugly. So every night, give thanks for something, she mentioned this, that you were never grateful for before. I don't know, the law of gravity, rhubarb, last week, Pastor Bob Sorensen said we should go out and bless the mountains and bless the trees. Be grateful for things that you have found awe and wonder in. Practice forgiveness. And after reading this book, I went out and talked about things that were people that I had felt we had some discontent between each other. I know that the Village read Mary Lynn Robinson's novel Home when I was at work week, so October 08, which was a sequel to her first book, Gilead. As I read Gilead, how many of you read Gilead? You should go to the bookstore and get it. It's closed. But go tomorrow and get it. As I read it, I just took notes constantly in the sides. And my Mennonite friend said it's the only book he ever read, and when he finished the last page, immediately turned to the first page and read it again. But she wrote this book, Home, and my nephew, Charles Peterson, who is a writer, wrote for, I think it was New York Times Book Review. He wrote about reviewing this book, Home, and he said, I love this. Christianity is the science of forgiveness. What good is that? We talked about forgiveness in Bible study today. We had a pastor once who said that to forgive someone, they really have to understand what you're forgiving them for, or it's, you can't do it. Which really means you get to rub it in again. Mm-hmm. And it was really part of her struggling with ministry. I don't know if she ever moved beyond it. She has many other wonderful traits, but that's something she kind of stumbled on. So practice forgiveness. Forgiveness is often not what you do for the other person. It's what you do for yourself. And it's coming to an understanding of the other person as they are. So this week you could make an inventory of your regrets and resentments, and wherever possible, make amends. Be gentle with them, be gentle with yourself. I did some of this a while ago, and had about 3 or 4 people said, you know, I really felt bad when this happened 5, 6 months ago. And sometimes they say, well, gosh, it really means a lot to me that you came to me. Or they said, what? I don't remember. Paul apologized for me for something that I wasn't the least bit upset about the other day. But that's okay. Then you know the other person's a forgiving person. And finally, number 49 was, everyone was put love into action. Everybody longs for the same thing, to love and be loved. And the biggest factor, she believes, for our capacity as love is how we were parented. Most of us get what's called good enough parenting. And a lot of us, that builds resentment. If you are mad at your parents about it. One of my really close friends had a great attitude. He said, life's a puzzle, your parents give you some of the pieces. Very few parents have all. So, life's a puzzle, and your parents only give you some of the pieces. And my parents didn't give me a ton of pieces, but I was never really resentful. But I could tell you the ones I didn't get. What other thoughts do people have about how we can be gentle to ourselves and take care of ourselves?
Surround yourself with a community or other people who help you along your way of all these things, who encourage that and who help create a healthy environment mentally and physically and in every way that you talk about. I think part of the reason that you're saying that you find this so easy at Holden is part of the community factor.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that plays a big role with somebody who's struggling on the inside to have all that support. I think it's really important part of community that is good for your health.
You feel like you have it out when you're not involved,
mm-hmm.
from where you came from?
In a certain way, yeah.
Will you go back to your last order? Put that one just before.
This one? Some of them are a little quirky. You have to read the book.
Where was the forgiveness?
That's in the last book.
Oh, sorry. I just wondered how it was for
41, practice forgiveness.
See, I think there's another part of that too. Mm-hmm. It's, so that suggests that you're the person that's forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I mean, struggling to find that sort of inner peace, it's also knowing when to seek it, knowing when to seek forgiveness. And I think one of the most powerful things that I heard, it was, you know, one of these two-day retreats, corporate retreats, offsite, we had a speaker come talk about. The one thing I took away from those 2 days was the extraordinary difference between saying, I apologize, and will you forgive me? Because I'm apologizing, we see it from the athletes, it's even conditional. You know, to the extent that I've harmed anyone, I'm sorry. Whereas to actually confront someone and ask them to forgive you is to invite them to take a risk and to invite them to potentially say no. And the moment you ask the question, this transfer of power occurs, and it's an amazing thing to watch, especially if this is someone who you need to seek forgiveness from. They're harboring it. They've got a thought about it. They feel strongly about it. And to actually just put before them the opportunity to release you and grant that forgiveness or not has been powerful in my relationships. And to do it, and especially in a corporate setting or with colleagues, they're somewhat taken aback by it, that you would approach it in that manner.
I never thought about that before. Yeah. Apology just takes one person. And Tiger Woods apologized to the whole country.
Yeah.
But asking forgiveness, it requires two people doing quite a few things.
Well, it's really laying yourself bare.
Because they might say no.
Right, on the other side, once you get someone else's buy-in to that, if they're disarmed enough to think about it and say, well, yes, I forgive you, it frees them too. I think.
Yeah.
From revisiting, bringing back, harking back, and that's particularly so damaging relationships too.
It also assumes that you've done the work to affirm that you are forgivable for whatever the offense was or in general. Because forgiving oneself, I think, is essential. Think of, like in the Lord's Prayer, you know, forgive us our sins as we forgive those who have sinned against us. Well, consider that we sometimes sin against ourselves. We offend ourselves. We let ourselves down. If we're going to love another, we need to be coming from a place of being able to love ourselves. If we're going to be a workaholic about loving someone else, well, that would necessarily imply that we're a workaholic about loving ourselves too. Isn't usually the case, but
my alcoholics
in my life,
they carry around a lot of guilt. That's why they got the fifth step to try to, you know, get some of that out in the open.
Other thoughts?
Biggest thing in my life was realizing that I was motivated by my own fear. I don't know how to describe that, but oftentimes my biggest emotion was fear. I was afraid someone was going to get into an accident. I was afraid somebody wasn't going to come over. I was afraid. And I went, why am I doing this? And it's not that many years ago that I went, I'm going to stop feeling the fear. And occasionally I just have this rising and I just go, be gone.
You can talk to our emotions and sometimes change them, and sometimes you can't.
Well, yeah.
Here's some just final thoughts. Remember the basics. Breathe. Take time for a walk. Take care of yourself. Be a good listener. Practice gratitude. That's kind of a practical thing people do. Forgive. Search for meaning. Learn to manage your mind. Keep things simple. And practice random acts of kindness. Well, thank you very much for coming. We're a little bit early, which is a good thing. How often are you upset that church is done early?
Never.
Thank you.